Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show are Todd Wertman and Nick Smith, who are both car buffs and are in the Discovery Channel show Sticker Shock. The show features some classic cars and their owners asking the question, "What's my car worth?" It also does a great job of telling the sentimental story behind the vehicle for its owners, who really more often than not have spent years and thousands of dollars restoring their car. Todd and Nick are two of the professional appraisers on the show that investigate the vehicle's history and look at the condition to come up with a price tag. There's a 1966 Batmobile replica with actual rocket launchers that a guy spent some 900 hours building. One guy brings in a 1931 Chevrolet Roadster that his parents owned, which was once featured with the Beach Boys on the Ed Sullivan Show. There's even a street-legal World War II tank that the owner inherited from his family. I definitely learned a lot about restoring vehicles and some of these specific and very interesting and passionate car cultures in talking with them. So I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Okay, well, thank you guys very much for coming in.
Sure.
So you're fresh off of the plane?
No, I got in last night.
And you said you were riding with 100 other people on motorcycles?
Yeah, bike rally around Northern California, yeah.
Wow. Do you restore motorcycles?
I try not to.
No?
But yes, I do. I don't do it personally.
Gotcha. But, okay. One question I have for you is, when you see bumper stickers on cars, does that make you guys sad?
It depends what it says.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it makes me sad. I find it sad that somebody wants to advertise themselves like that, whether it's a college or a position on a political something. I just find it sad to, I don't know, be so out loud about it.
I like the punk rock ones. My son beat your son up at such and such elementary school or whatever.
Yeah, like the family. Yeah. The stick figure families or whatever.
When you're sitting in traffic on the 405 board, it gives you something to read.
True.
That isn't a text message.
True. My husband used to work at a Mercedes-Benz in Cincinnati, and whenever people would bring their cars in with a bumper sticker on it, he would be like, "Why did you do that?" It would like make him upset. So I want to start this by saying I'm not a car buff at all. And I feel like this show is sort of... Yeah. I feel like this show is for a bigger audience, it seems like.
Yes.
Based on hearing when these people bring in cars and they restore them, and you hear about, my father, he got the car when he was a teen, and then my mom, she sewed, and she sewed part of the interior, and it's been in my family forever, and learning those stories, it seems like that's like what the show is kind of getting after, like drawing a bigger audience,
I would say, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, too, is a lot of the people that bring their cars on the show are not car buffs. They have a singular car passion, which is that car, which is usually connected to a memory of either a family member or a connection to a time. And if they didn't have that connection, the car would have been long gone and not replaced, because they're not really car people always.
Yeah, definitely.
Some of them become car people as a result. The car becomes a part of their social life. And part of them, their makeup, and they enjoy everything that brings to them, from car shows to everything else. They're not necessarily car people as such, but they just enjoy it.
Right, they fall into that niche market of whatever the car is. Do you guys have a particular car that you've owned in life that you have a good memory associated with? Maybe your first car or...
Yeah, lots.
All of them.
Yeah, all of them. When you are as close to as many cars as we are all day, every day, to sort of choose one for your own is a really, really big statement.
Yeah. What was your first car?
My first car was a 1980 Volkswagen Rabbit pickup truck. I was a skateboarder, and so a small pickup truck where I could drive around a skate ramp all the time was my biggest priority.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you pretty pumped when you got it?
Yeah. I paid for half, so that was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That definitely adds to it. When you put your money in.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, all right, I got to take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
I bought an Isuzu Rodeo when I was 16. $2,000.
Okay.
And it was like a Lamborghini to me. It was great. What about you? What was your first car?
I wasn't skateboarding, so I was, I was driving at that point. I had a an old Ford Escort, 1971 Ford Escort, banana yellow, black vinyl roof, tweaked all the suspension, and used to race it down the lanes in the countryside of England.
Oh, where are you from in England?
Just north of London, just outside.
What's the town called?
St. Albans.
I used to live in Birmingham.
That's about 100 miles like off.
Not that close, but...
Birmingham's lovely.
Yeah.
Brummy Steve, if you're listening to this, it's lovely.
Brummy Steve, the Brummies. So, okay, so first off, before we get into the show, I kind of want to talk about your backgrounds and how you sort of have gotten to this point where you are. Nick, you currently work for Worldwide Auctioneers.
I do.
But you, I was reading, you've worked as a sales manager in for Bentley and Lamborghini in Beverly Hills. And how did you... Did you grow up in a family that really appreciates cars or restoring
not
cars?
Not at all. Not one. No. In fact, I just found out that one uncle was into motorcycles, and that was it. And I had no idea about that 50 years ago. I was the anomaly. No. And it, from growing up, very early age, it was all about cars and motorcycles. But I went off on a different tangent and had a different career for a long time. Oh. And then switched careers in 2002.
What'd you do?
Music business.
Oh. Doing what, like promoting?
Everything that would
or do you
pay
play,
the bills.
Do you play any instruments?
I don't. Everything but play an instrument. Oh. Yeah. So music management to production to agency to God knows whatever else in
gotcha.
Between. But and then just wanted to take a break from that and do something different. And so cars was it, and I got very lucky.
When did you move to the United States?
28 years ago.
So do you feel like, was the call... car culture drastically different?
Very different, yeah. An appreciation for old cars is much easier here because they don't rust.
Right. Especially in Southern California.
Yeah. I used to drive Italian cars in England, and on a quiet evening you could hear them rust.
Really?
Oh, terrible.
Just because it rains all the time?
Oh, just because it rains all the time, yeah.
Gotcha. And what about you, Todd? Did your parents, one of them instill that in you?
My dad was a car dealer when I was growing up, and so I enjoyed looking at the new models and reading the magazines and being able to talk to him about that. It was not at all my goal to be in the car business. I'm also on career number two. I was in the movie business for a decade after college here in L.A., and... enjoyed it very much, but ultimately didn't see it as a long-term grown-up career. The path that I was taking down, it was not going to lend to a very high quality of family life for me. So I went on a, because I was working on productions, and that was when everything was in Canada. So for basically 5 years straight, I was in LA for 2 or 3 months a year and you know, going back and forth and all of that. So I was looking to get off of that train. And I just went on, I didn't pick cars even then. I just went on a big quest to find another career. And I interviewed a bunch of different people, anybody that I could talk to who was having success in a different business, and tried to find a new career. And one of the people that I met was a guy named David Gooding. He was president of an auction company specializing in collector cars. And I asked him for a job. And so we started out very, very small, right around 2002, the same time that Nick got started, funnily enough. And that turned into auctions and then buying and selling and then dealerships and then now on my own.
So coming from different industries, when you guys got into this, was it a big learning curve?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I would say it's a big learning curve, understanding the, you know, there's the cars are the one part of it, but then there's the culture and sort of the art of the deal, what's kind of expected at this level of which we're trading is important to understand.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's 100 million different kinds of makes and models and years of cars, too.
Yeah, and that's the start. And then 100 million for each of those are the type of people that want to be in on the deals and the fan base for each of them.
Oh, yeah.
And the dramas of, involved with all of that.
Yeah, definitely. So how did you guys, what did you guys think about the show when you heard about it? Like, you know, when you first were pitched the idea, or I was,
it's an interesting show as far as I'm concerned, because it's not sort of the run of the mill car show where everyone's shouting, yelling and throwing wrenches around.
Yeah.
It's a nicer show than that. It's a more pleasant show. And I think it comes with a great deal of quality for that. And it's more about the people and their relationship to the cars. So it's a little bit of a different skew on it.
Yeah. With my, former connection to entertainment, I know a lot of people in car television, and over the years I'd see them and talk to them about what they're working on or developing, and it was always nothing that I would ever be involved in, just because, you know, to go have some short run on a television show, but to completely ruin your credibility with false drama or manufactured information that isn't accurate wasn't anything that I wanted to follow me around long term career wise. So not that anybody was really knocking on my door that hard, but I had a lot of conversations where I walked away from saying, I really hope I don't talk to them about that show again.
Yeah.
And then when I heard about this one, it had a much higher level of credibility, and we weren't going to be coached on what to think or say, and the overall outcome could be our genuine opinion. And we respectfully walked through with the car owners, respectfully and carefully walked through our opinion of value when we have a dramatically different opinion of value than they do. That's obviously sensitive. We're not here to squash their hobby or embarrass them from what they've been telling their family or friends back home. So we have to very precisely and tactfully lay out from where our opinion comes, and hopefully they appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, I saw you both do that. One, you were appraising a car. I can't recall the type of vehicle, but it was with a guy named Mo. That was his nickname.
Yeah, Mo. Yeah, Maurice Boeto.
Yeah.
Mo and I had a different opinion on his car, and I hope he doesn't love it any less. But, you know, my job is to accurately appraise something. So I gave him enough reasons why, and hopefully he understands my position. But, yeah, we were $200,000 apart in our appraisal.
Yeah. So. Hadn't he added some more like modern conveniences or whatever to the car?
He has. There are, and that's perfectly acceptable in the Corvette world. People can modernize them, and it makes them more enjoyable to them. He had a very outdated modern car. So, you know, when you say modern changes every day from year to year, and he had a pretty dated, modernly updated car, and it just didn't strike me the way it struck him, and so I said my piece.
And then there was a difference I saw with one that stands out to me is the World War II tank that I think which you had to like climb up into and climb out of in your jeans.
As to Todd's point, sensitivity to somebody with their opinion of what it is worth exponentially increases when the guy owns a tank.
Oh, yeah.
So I was a little nervous and about it, but we got through it.
Yeah.
His tank was, he'd done some basic updating restoration work to it and some good bones, but it needed all the cosmetic work.
Yeah.
And my opinion of the value of his tank was identical after the restoration. He wanted it to be that now, but it wasn't there. So he needed to do the work to get it to the value he wanted it to be. But yeah, we were fine.
So do you get a little bit nervous when you know that you're going to have to...
When the guy owns a tank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think... So he just drives out in parades?
That is totally street legal. Horn, lights, the whole nine yards.
Do you think he drives it to run errands?
I hope not. Although it would be a great way to get through LA traffic.
Could you imagine? If you saw the tank on the freeway or something?
Yeah.
I honestly think I'd get a little bit scared.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, why is there a tank on the freeway?
Yeah.
So what was the, how long did the casting take? Because it's really cool. These people are coming from everywhere, it seems, across the United States.
The show did a, they did a really good job. They cast a wide net to attract the people. They came from all over the country, and were sourced based on their relationship with their car, whatever it was. We heard a lot of it was my dad's, or we heard a lot of I bought it and we've taken the family all over the country in it. To one of my favourites, it was my first car. I sold it and 10 years later found it again and bought it back.
Wilbur. That guy.
I can't remember. That was the Wilbur story.
That was the Wilbur. Okay.
I love that guy.
Yeah, that was that guy loves that car.
Yeah.
That car.
Yeah. That car specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. That car.
Yeah. So one question that I had watching this is, so, you know, one guy's from New Jersey, someone's from Pasadena, Texas, whatever. Does the car culture in general vary based on where you live in the United States?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In what ways, if you can describe that?
Oh, I mean, regionally, I would say that certain types of modifications or certain types of cars are more popular in certain areas than others. So, you know, when you want to talk about Texas, you would be talking about a big pickup truck culture. Obviously, with all the ranching, they grew up around that. So that's easy to understand, that everybody wants the latest and greatest highly modified pickup truck. So that's a huge culture out there. They're also pretty interested in muscle cars. And then there are, you know, some funny little pockets where you don't quite know how it happened, but all of a sudden there will be, you know, one town where there are five different car collectors of the exact same manufacturer. And so I have always been fascinated by that. At one point about 10 years ago, the most important Maseratis in the world were all in Houston.
Really?
And they were owned by four different guys. And I don't know if they were all friends or competing, or if they all got them from the same dealer. Do you remember?
I don't know.
This,
yeah,
Nick?
I remember it. Yeah, no, I don't know the source story.
Alfredo Brenner and Bookout, and I mean all these guys. It was just every important Maserati was in Houston at one time and in various collections. So that always amazed me.
That is crazy. I loved the one story about the guy I think I wrote it down. He had the Woody. And there's only three that even remain. Keller, Super Chief, Woody.
Yeah, that was one that hits from left field. We didn't get a great deal of time to view the cars and crawl all over them. So when things got unusual and quirky, I mean, fortunately, I've sold a couple of tanks in the past. Don't ask. but yeah, the Keller threw us all for a bit of a loop. And Randy Carlson, one of our appraisers, colleagues, did a fantastic job of researching the car in not very much time.
Yeah, I mean,
to get to the bottom of that story.
So how much prep time did you guys do? I mean, ahead of time, did they say a week out, like, hey, you're going to look at this particular kind of car?
Not remotely.
We got the basic information, which was helpful. So we got kind of year, make, and model, so that we could brush up on the facts of 1964 Chevrolet and brush up on those things. So that's half of the appraisal. The other half of the appraisal would be looking at the actual car that we're appraising. That we got very little time with. And I believe that was kind of by design, because we aren't actors. So they wanted us to inspect the car, have natural reactions to it on camera. So our evaluations of the car that, you know, now happen to be like 6 minutes on the show were over an hour of actual filming time, and that's when we were looking at the car, and they were filming us figuring out what it was.
Gotcha. I think, Nick, I think you appraised one girl. Her name's Jenny, maybe, and she was really sassy. And she had
Sassy Jenny. She was known as Sassy Jenny.
Was she?
Oh, yeah, she was awesome. She was fantastic.
Is it okay for me to say you guys are having an affair?
There's talk.
Okay.
There's talk. I did start a couple of rumors.
Okay.
Yes. I thought I sensed some marvelous chemistry between you guys.
Oh, there was a lot of chemistry. Yeah. She was great. She was really bubbly, and we met within seconds of the cameras rolling.
Oh, okay.
And I said, you know, you're wonderful, don't clam up. A lot of people sort of, as soon as they have wonderful, great personalities and then the cameras start, the little red lights go on and they turn stiff as a board. And I said, do that. Just keep doing that. She was just wonderful. But she had an unbelievable connection with that car. She'd owned it for a great many years and broke my heart when she told me that it was the one thing in her life that hadn't let her down, ever. I mean, I'm not sure I believe that. Actually, it's probably broken down a few times.
But her boyfriend gave it to her. And I feel like she said a line.
Broke a door and all sorts of nonsense.
Exactly. Yeah, like the door wouldn't open. And she says a line like, I saw a fire behind in your eyes that I'd never seen before when you sat behind the wheel. So the boyfriend just gave her the car. And she had the car tattooed on her back.
Oh boy!
Right?
Oh,
yeah,
I mean,
she had a T-shirt made. She's got no. She's
how big is the tattoo, Nick?
It's not 1-to-1. It's scale, but there's a lot of it. It's not a little 3-inch.
Yeah, she's
artistic representation.
I would say that the one thing that was absolutely by design by the director and producers of the show is we never spoke to the car owners until we met them on camera. Never, ever, not once. If we saw them walking around, we sort of were told to walk the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't want us having any chit chat that would then become, oh, we won't talk about that on camera because we already talked about it.
Right.
So we were told to stay away.
Interesting.
So it's reality TV. The reactions were real. So when I gave her the appraisal on her car, she gave me quite a hug.
Did she? Oh, yeah, it was higher. Well,
It was a decent... who cares? It was a hug.
Yeah, it was great.
We did it for the hugs.
Yes, you definitely did.
I don't think anybody hugged me all season. Not a one.
Hold on one second. I'm just going to hug Todd for a second.
No.
I think you guys should hug Todd.
Could you hug Todd?
I have had hugs. I mean, I'm not... Not saying there's anything wrong in my life. I'm just saying there were no car owners who touched me.
Well, Todd was very sensitive. Although we were going to have T-shirts made, Crusher of Dreams and Dasher of Hopes. But he did a fine job being sensitive.
Yes. Was there any
in doing that?
Was there any super emotional reactions that you guys got? Because from what I saw, people were just kind of like, if they didn't like what you said, they took it and they're like, okay, that's fair, whatever. But was there anyone who got, like, kind of secretly angry?
There are. No,
Fester.
Yes.
Fester, right?
Fester was wonderful. Fester was on the outside.
Got down on his knees for Randy.
We've mentioned Mo on the
no,
downside.
No, he did. He bowed down?
There was kneeling. There was kneeling. Because, and that was an interesting car. That was a 1986 Mini truck. And it was part of a culture that was very hot back in those days where you could buy a truck for cheap and do a tricked out paint job and lower it and et cetera, et cetera. And this one was a magazine cover many, many times over. And again, Randy did the appraisal, and because of its importance, because of its historical importance, he hit it at quite a high number.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I just thought it was a yellow Mini truck. I didn't understand any of the history at all. So I was watching on the show, and he laid it all out. And I was like, oh, okay, this thing is important. And then, Fester went
part
bananas.
Of the research, yeah. And Fester went bananas.
Has there been any reaction from, like, you know, specifically communities in that, like in the Mini truck community or in the Camaro community that have been, like, from the show?
The Mini truck community feels vindicated. I think they have been telling each other all along, our cars are important. We love this culture. Someday people will realize, and that day came.
Yep.
And they were very happy.
And then there's the big education.
Yeah, exactly.
Yay, Mini trucks. Great. And then there's the educational aspect of it. We try to offer some advice. What should you do with the car to increase its value? Is it worth it? Where's your cost base on it? What's the return on that investment? Todd did a great job on a Porsche that I watched a couple of times learning from, getting the original information on what the specs of the car to do, redo the interior. You can spend X amount of dollars redoing an interior on a Porsche, which is quite a lot of dollars, and original paint colors, et cetera, and see if it's worth doing any kind of restoration or not and just drive it.
Yeah, what he's saying is there was the car had been modified or updated not in a very good way, And I basically made probably $15,000 or $20,000 worth of recommendations to him that would have increased the value by about 40.
Oh, wow.
So who wouldn't spend 20 to get 40, right? He didn't really seem to care. It's not really the direction that he was going with the car, but at least he has that in the back of his mind for if and when he chooses to sell. And
yeah. And that's what your company,
yes,
your day job, that's sure. what you guys specialize in.
My right? day job, yeah. We specialize in post-war European sports cars, and we are most known for Porsche.
Porsche. Does it bug you when people say Porsche?
No. My partner says Porsche.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just, and it drives everybody nuts because they want a definitive answer. And it's really just like,
let's call Dr. Porsche and see what he says.
Where are you from? Yeah. You know, it's just,
yeah.
Where are you from?
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's tomato.
Right.
It's Porsche.
It's aluminium.
It is.
Right.
And there was actually, that was as near as we got to throwing wrenches around and having a fight when Dennis Pitzenberger, the host of the show, who does a fantastic job of drawing out the story from the clients, and then, in my case, proceeds to make fun of me every time there's a European sports car or something made of aluminium.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think
but you guys have actually, you've added another letter to the word. It's not tomato, tomato, like how do you want to pronounce it? You guys have an extra I.
Okay.
When it's, we say aluminum.
When it's called American.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. No,
you're
right.
We're about to start throwing wrenches. Pass me a wrench. When it's called American,
oh,
we can talk about
hold
it.
Hold on. My favorite is we call it a blinker, and they call it an indicator, which I'm like, I feel like we dumb down the word.
Yeah.
A
blinker. Really?
Yeah.
We have an indicator. It indicates which way you're going to go.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's like the smarter word. We call it a blinker.
Yes.
Like blink, blink, blink.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. And there's an interesting one coming up because I was given an American car, sort of, that it was actually built in the UK. Uh-huh. And someone customized with a lot of American sports kind of idea, and that's coming up on Wednesday, I think, isn't it?
What is that? What are you talking about?
The Nash Metropolitan.
Yeah, I didn't even look at it.
Made up to look like a Boston Red Sox tribute, I guess.
Oh, really?
I had to do 2 minutes of Nash Metropolitan research and a lot on American sports.
Yeah, you a baseball fan?
They
Red Sox?
They're football, right?
The Red Sox?
Aren't they? Oh, no. That's gonna make Wednesday. That's gonna make Thursday morning's Facebook look good.
So, one thing that I'm curious about also is if you have a favorite kind of niche car culture, community. And I ask this because my father-in-law collects CJ5 Jeeps.
Nice.
Yeah.
From like the 70s.
Yeah, cool. Great fun.
He had, I think, 1973 Jeep that he drove in high school and drove it all the time, moved to Florida, drove it back from Florida to Ohio, whatever. And then as an adult, he tracked one down that was almost the exact same car and bought it and then now collects a bunch of them. He found one, which is, I think, 1979. Jeep did this like silver anniversary edition Jeep. And he happened to see it in the neighborhood that he lived in that this high school kid was driving. And the kid didn't like it because it was too expensive on gas. I think it was like a V8. And so my father-in-law was like, you got to get me this Jeep. Like, how much can I buy this for? And I think he bought it for like $5,000. And there wasn't that much mileage on it. Like, I think he made off in the deal. So he collects all these Jeeps. And it's so funny because since I know him, I almost have been watching the show through his eyes a little bit. And like you
perfect
were kind of
candidate.
Saying
he
earlier.
He's a perfect candidate for the show with that kind of story.
Yeah.
If he found his original Jeep, it would be, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's very cool. And the way that, so in being interested in these specific kind of Jeeps and he loves working on them and making sure they're like pristine condition, all original, he then knows all these people in the Jeep community there.
Yeah.
So he goes to like Jeep meetups. There's this one called Gravelrama where they all bring their Jeeps and like drive up this big hill and like see how far it'll go. And he like, we'll talk on the phone to people, and he's like, all right, I'm looking for a certain kind of, you know, Jeep bumper. And he's like, all right, who can I talk to? Can I talk to Steve? Can I talk to Earl? Can I talk to the Sneed brothers? Like, he just knows all these random Jeep people.
Absolutely.
And it's so...
That's the car thing.
That's it.
It's so... I love it.
Yes.
Is there a certain kind of, you know, car community that you feel like, oh, they are so intense and I love it?
Yes.
What?
Go ahead, dude. Okay.
Well, Porsche people and Corvette people.
Uh-huh.
Having sold numerous Corvettes and Porsches, the way I do it is stand there, say, this is it, and then take a step back. Because gotcha. They know more about it than I will ever possibly know.
Okay.
Hey, Todd?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when you spend enough time in a dealership like I do, a lot of times people will come by just to demonstrate to whoever they're with how much they know. And so that's a green 912. And they'll start on a long tangent with the person that they've brought over and give them a full explanation. And sometimes it's right and sometimes it's not. I don't really care. I'm just going to let them roll with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are the car cultures and the people that follow certain kinds of cars have a short language and an understanding of the models, and it's neat to watch.
It's a great resource from my perspective at the auction, where we designed the auction to be a little bit of something for everybody, from price point to country of manufacture and everything in between, old, new, very old, etc. And knowing those people is huge. When a CJ Jeep comes through, you know, I need that expert to tell me what I've got.
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
definitely.
I can't be an expert in everything. So we need those guys, and they're fantastic. They're a huge resource.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, there's websites I feel like dedicated to finding, tracking down all the remaining.
I'm sure there's CJ5Bumper.com.
Yeah.
Your dad should probably have gone there.
Yeah, I know. He probably runs the website.
The online forums that feed information to a lot of these clubs and like-minded people are really how they found the cars for the show. Mostly they advertised in the forums and people submitted their cars, and that's how they found them.
Oh wow. Okay. So I'm curious about your personal preference.
Sure.
So a guy like the guy with the Wilbur car.
Sure.
What was that?
Oldsmobile.
Okay. So he added some type of truck bed liner to the back.
Uh-huh.
So he could, you know, put surfboards in and out. It sounds like he drives this around all the time. Loves
yep.
it. Super pumped on Wilbur. Do you think that it's better to have a vehicle that's all original and there haven't been a lot of modifications to it, so it's higher value, or you've added some, you've changed it, taken down the value by maybe adding kind of more modern things, but it's more convenient to drive and maybe you enjoy it more. Like you added Bluetooth or, do you
well,
know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's a multi-layered question. I'll do the best I can. That guy's enthusiasm for Wilbur, he liked that car more than anything. Okay.
Yeah.
That car made him extremely happy. So the choices that he made along the way enhanced his use of it and his enthusiasm for it. I've sold $6 million cars to guys who were never going to love it as much as that guy loved that old station wagon. So in terms of judging value, I can give precise information on good choices, bad choices, but that guy was in love with that car, and that was worth a lot more than it cost him to build.
Right.
So I think he's doing great with old Wilbur. But no, you should not spray Rhino liner in the wagon back to prevent it from rusting more. You should actually fix the rust and paint it properly if you're solely focusing on value. But
gotcha.
He found a formula with Wilbur that was second to none.
But it's a huge question, and it's an even greater question now because there's a shift in the culture.
Right.
So if your focus with the hobby is to go to one of the premier Concorde Elegance, where everything's judged on originality and correctness, how it left the factory back in the day, then you'll spend a lot of time and money researching and making it so, and it runs into millions.
Yeah.
If it's a reasonably cheap car and it's an old car that you're very fond of aesthetically, or you have that personal connection, then yeah, some modifications to it, absolutely, make it more drivable and make it a more fun experience. Then it's a driving experience, it's not a showing experience, and it's a whole different ballgame.
Right. See, that to me is like the point of it.
Right.
I agree. I like to drive them.
And so it just, we were put in a difficult position on the show where we seem kind of judgy, where in reality, I'm sorry, I was brought here to comment on the value of the car. So I'm going to point out positive and negative aspects of value. Doesn't mean you're supposed to go change your car
right. Just
because of what I said, but that was the point of me being on the show. So.
Yeah. Sticker shock.
Yeah.
There you go.
But, I mean, if you've got a $7,000 car that's going to drop to all of $6,500 because you changed the stereo, but you want to listen to the news, Fox 11 News, then why not? I mean, you know, just do it. Just do it to enjoy it. But if it's an important car, if it's a superbly original car, and you're going to start cussing it around for stereos or put different bits and pieces in it that can't be put back to original, then you're going to start seriously detracting from the value.
Gotcha. I feel like in one episode I heard Addison, is that one of the neighbors? I feel like I heard her say that sometimes adding modern conveniences to a specific kind of vehicle she was appraising actually adds value. Is that the case sometimes?
It can, absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yeah, certain cars that don't drive very well, you can update them a bit and then you end up using them more, and people ultimately want to use the cars, so that works out well.
So watching Sticker Shock, I was also sort of thinking about electric cars, and because a lot of these people probably grew up with this specific car, working on it and, you know, knowing how to rebuild it and restore it. And with electric cars, the skill set is different.
Well, it's changed. In the 1890s, 50% of the cars on the road were electric.
In the 1890s?
It's just shifted now. Shifted to gas power, and now it's shifting back.
Oh, so, but, I mean, is the automotive industry as a whole, are there enough technicians that as that shifts, as more people get electric cars and...
it will shift, for sure.
Yeah, and...
We're looking at, there are various schools and organizations and college courses that are out there to restore old cars. So people like Todd and I that, you know, supporting the hobby and the industry and from a different level are fully supportive of that.
Yeah.
We need people to fix them and restore them for us to be able to market and sell them.
But yes, I think people will continue modifying, restoring, appreciating cars that are being built today, even though they're electric. I think in 20 years there will be an industry that supports their restoration if enough people want them, you know, and an early model Tesla that somebody wants to be perfect again. There will be somebody someday to restore that, yes.
And then there's the ultimate modification that we're looking at the moment. There's several people, organizations, companies that are taking old cars and modifying them with electric drivetrains, which is, I just read about.
That's pretty cool.
Jaguar Heritage in England taking an old E-Type and making it electric.
Really?
And very seriously electric, yeah.
How much do you think that would sell for?
That's an interesting question, because we don't really have comps and an idea of that market. Where is that market? How does that market work?
Yeah.
And that's going to be a very abrupt learning curve.
I think we're waiting, though, for somebody to develop an electric drivetrain that you can buy, like the crate engine of electric. Right now, you just have to wait for somebody to wreck a Tesla or a Volt or something and then buy their parts and be capable enough to engineer transferring them over. But I'm sure somebody's in the works right now being able to sell you Chevy crate engine that is the electric version of that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Season 2 of Sticker Shock.
Season 2.
Watch this space.
Right. Oh, have you guys been to the Peterson Museum?
A couple of times.
I went to the lowrider exhibit. I think it's over now, but it was really cool. Did you go to that? I mean, it was the past year.
I didn't see the lowrider. I blasted through once, but I was on the way to an event, so I didn't actually get to hang out and have a look.
Going there made me appreciate the passion for.
The Peterson is one of the premier museums.
Is it?
Probably in the world.
I mean, it's awesome. I thought it was awesome, but I just kind of stumbled into it.
It's fabulous, absolutely wonderful, and the people involved are incredible. They turn their exhibits frequently. And within one exhibit, they will turn that over as well. They just let a Ferrari.
They have access to amazing cars, and they do a good job of celebrating LA. There's a little bit of LA in almost everything that they do. So we definitely led the charge in certain cultures, like low riding.
Yeah.
And so they were smart enough to give the local people a reason to come back time and time again.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, just learning about specifically low riders, it's like you learn about history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it like speaks through the cars. Mm-hmm. And there's art, and it kind of like just about how sort of a resistance to like hot rod cars and what was going on in like the civil rights era, and they started lowering them and painting them, and I don't know, it was pretty cool. I liked going there and learning about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting place.
Okay, so season one, when this show posts, there's going to be two more episodes. And then I've been watching the show on the Discovery Go app,
mm-hmm.
which it'll just be available.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be out there.
Yeah, the episode airs on Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock, and it is immediately live on the app and on the website for free.
Okay, so if anyone listening hasn't watched it yet, look for Sassy Jenny. She was my favorite.
Yeah.
Nick's girlfriend.
I guess I love that woman. And the baseball car will have aired as well at that point. Yeah.
Oh yes.
I got it right.
Very good. Yeah.
Barely.
And the tank.
The guy couldn't spell socks, but apart from that.
No. Oh, did you guys get a look at the Batmobile replica?
Yeah.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, we That's actually cool. all we all took a look at that together.
I think we all had a 5-year-old moment at that point.
That guy was very precious to me because
it
seemed like he had watched the show when he was a little kid. And it stuck with him, and he said he spent something crazy like 900 hours or something working on this. And
that is why we all do this. We're all 5 years old, and we never grew up past it.
I loved it. I mean, even just seeing while he's waiting for the appraiser, I think it was Addison,
mm-hmm.
to tell him, you can just see it in his eyes. I mean, he's like, I've worked on this for so
long.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You're
this
right.
This is my craftsmanship. Like, don't hurt me.
Yeah, no,
you know what I mean?
And Addison was very kind. And the car was well deserved of it. He'd spent a lot of time making everything work.
Yeah.
The rockets and the flames.
Yeah,
and
the flamethrower and he had a switch where you can put the bat signal out in front.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
The second fastest car to get through LA traffic.
Yeah.
Addison did a great job on that, noticing all the little features. That's not really something I would have known a lot about.
No, she spent some time watching.
She was the right girl for that appraisal for sure.
I like it. Okay, so what do you guys have planned the rest of the day? Anything?
It's my wife's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Tanya.
Happy birthday, Tanya.
So we will all go out to dinner. We have two little kids. So I will go back to Orange County shortly and gear up for that.
Awesome.
And I'm going to drag an old 1965 Triumph motorcycle off a truck and make it look less like it's been dragged through a hedge.
Ooh.
It's a bit of a mess.
How long were you riding for?
It's 1,000 miles.
Are you sore?
I don't know. It's numb. Like bits of me just aren't working today.
Yeah.
From the vibration more than anything else. Plus, I ride quite hard. And the roads are beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. From San Francisco, we went up towards Red Bluff in 108 degree weather, and then across the top of the mountains to down to Fort Bragg, and then back down to San Francisco.
Wow, that's cool. Do you do trips like that pretty often?
Not very often, no.
No.
No, but that one was a good one.
That's sweet. Todd, out of curiosity, have you already begun to teach your kids about vehicles?
No.
Basic things?
They are not interested.
No?
And I kind of love them for it. It's fine. Now, the really weird thing in my house, and this is going to sound wrong, but it's actually perfectly fine. My kids don't watch the show. They don't really care. And they thought it was pretty fun to see the commercials when we watch Naked and Afraid. We'll watch that together. My two kids and I will watch that. And so they got excited for the commercials. But then when the show started airing, they could make it through 5 or 6 minutes of an episode, and then no way. So no, I'm, you know what? I spend so much time talking about cars and being involved with cars that I can't wait to find out what they're into, and I'll let them lead what our experiences are. And I really don't care if they never care.
Yeah.
Huh. My son's pretty much the same way. He doesn't really care. He likes the show.
He does.
He's a little older. He likes the show, but he likes the aesthetics. It's interesting to watch people and how they interact with a car. Some people like to drive. Some people like to build. Some people like to show it, and all the different facets of what you can do and how you can integrate the hobby.
Right.
And he likes the aesthetics. He's more of, he'll end up designing, but then we just found out that he wants to be an architect. So I guess it's buildings. Way to go, son.
That's
much
a good,
better idea.
Yeah, that's a good career.
I think so.
Did are you going to teach your kids how to drive six shift?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Next week, my son is 15 and a half.
Oh, game time.
It's on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got to go and find some industrial area somewhere and take him for a drive.
Yeah, my mom tried to teach me and I messed up her clutch. Like real bad. But
yeah, I mean, it's easy for us. I'll just find a Porsche that's, you know, pretty long, pretty close to needing a clutch, and I'll just let them, you know, ruin it the rest of the way. That's not going to bother.
Go for it, kids.
Yeah, that's not going to bother me.
Yeah.
Nice, very cool. Okay, well, thank you guys very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Explaining to the non-car buff some car stuff. It's cool. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. Subscribe to our show. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and olympicandbundy.com. And if you're enjoying it, leave a 5-star rating and review. We would love it. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.